This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 76, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And every Thursday I release an episode of the Past Lives podcast called Paranormal Stories, and that has UFO cases as well as information on evidence of an afterlife. If you want to hear the extended version of this episode, which is an extra 20 minutes, you'll need to join the Patreon campaign, where there are now over 70 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave your review and be sure to subscribe. This week I'm talking to Paul Hamden and Cyan about the book The Zeta Race, Inside the Hive Mind, From Human to Alien. Paul's earliest memories of being visited by the Zetas are from when he was 18 months old. In 1978, he and three friends witnessed what is now referred to as a tic-tac craft that was no more than 10 metres away. Paul's relationship with the Zetas entered into a conscious two-way interactive training process some 25 years ago, and through Paul, the Zetas have communicated much information. Cyan's earliest memories of contact with the Zetas are from 4 years old. Cyan has been undergoing this training for the last 15 years, and both she and Paul have the same shared memory of time on board a craft together, as well as many other shared and separate experiences on craft and being with the Zetas. Hi, Paul and Cyan. Thanks a lot for coming back to the podcast. It's nice of you to come and talk about more stuff. We had such a great conversation last time, and I think we didn't get through half my questions last time. This time we're going to be talking about the book that's called The Zeta Race, Inside the Hive Mind, From Human to Alien. So how is this book different to the last book we talked about?
I think the other one was more instructional. This one's probably more based around my own personal experiences and how I developed and how science developing as well.
So. Yeah, the primer, which was the book we talked about last time, is very much the information that was given from the Zetas through Paul. And this new book is actually your story, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the primer is very extensive, isn't it? It's over 400 pages.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that the Zeta interviews is nearly 700 pages.
Yeah.
And that's another free book that we give away. So we've got a lot of extensive work that's been given by the Zetas as well.
So with your book, one of the things that stood out to me is that you say it wasn't until you were 40 that you remembered much of this stuff. So you were going through life just like all of us, most of us do.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And there may be so many people watching this and listening to this who are having contact and got no idea about it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, as you know, Cyan and I work with a lot of contactees. We have a lot of people contact us, and they'll just be talking to us, and they won't realise that some of the sentences, the word structures that they're using, the imagery that they're talking about is all based around contact. And because they've not spoken to anybody before, they don't realise that it's happening. Now, we don't automatically just jump to, oh, it's contact. But when a person starts to think more clearly about their contact, and basically we just become, you know, like a reflection, they start talking to us, we reflect back what they're saying, they may go, you know what, I actually have had contact, and it's really starting to become quite obvious to me that it has. So for myself as well, I remember my contact quite clearly up to about 5 or 6 years old. And then I had a craft come when I was 18, and I had my friends with me. And we saw the craft, it was about 6 to 8 metres away. We saw the Zetas inside the craft as well, because it was stationary, the craft. But after that, I didn't really get any contact till I was about 28. And that was actually a physical, like you would class that as an abduction, where three Zetas sort of came in and we had a physical altercation as they tried to get me onto craft. I mean, I can sort of smile at it now because I've worked through a lot of it. But, of course, back then I was terrified, you know, when those sorts of things happened.
Yeah.
So it's been sometimes a very difficult journey, absolutely.
So those incidents you're talking about when you were 18 and 28, did you then forget them and remember them when you were 40?
I never forgot the 28-year-old one, but definitely the 18-year-old one I forgot because, interestingly, we all were standing at the kitchen window three stories up viewing the craft. The Zetas were looking at us. We were looking at the Zetas. We weren't far from each other. The craft disappeared and all of us turned the same direction and walked back in and sat down in front of the TV and nobody spoke. It was as if we were programmed to do that. It was only when I was older that all of a sudden I remembered that it happened and then all the memories came flooding back. That's what's classed as a Class C narrative or screen memory.
Have you talked to the other people? Do they just not want to talk about it still?
Unfortunately, they've passed over.
Okay.
I have had contact with people that are very much still alive and well, and but we talk, you know, every few months about it. And
one thing that stood out to me there as well is you talk about it was a kind of abduction experience where you were fighting back. And so many people that I've, you know, the books I've read and people I've talked to, they say in these experiences, they're completely paralyzed. They can just move their eyes, perhaps, but you were at them.
Yeah, like I don't think this situation was actually supposed to happen. I'd got up and got dressed. It was in the dark. I used to go to work very early in the morning, you know, 5 o'clock or whatever. And I was just walking around in the dark because you get used to doing it. And next thing I heard a noise in the corner. And I went to reach out for the lights, and by now my, you know, vision was sort of getting much clearer, you know, as sort of you got used to it. And a little extraterrestrial jumped up on here. I thought it was a demon. I was terrified. Next thing I heard, another one come, jump on my other arm. I was, you know, pretty strong, 28-year-old who used to shovel concrete all day in the stinking heat. And so I thought, well, I don't know what they are, but I've got them. And then a third one came straight at me and hit me with such force that we all went down on the ground. And as we did, it put their hand on my head and I just blacked out completely. And I woke up and I thought, that was some sort of crazy dream. And then I realized that I was fully dressed and my shirt was on backwards. So
it sort of seems like, are you saying that it was like they were in the room and they weren't expecting you to wake up and be there? So
that's right.
And so they were kind of hiding in the corners and you caught them.
They were, yeah, because later on when I was about, maybe 48 or 50 or something, I woke up and they were standing around me and I went, don't put me to sleep. That was the first thing I said. And they said, you know, mind to mind, well, this is going to hurt. I said, I don't care. What is it that you're going to do? And they said, well, we've got to remove an implant. And I said, oh, okay. And they got this very long tool and trigger warning for people that have sort of got these sorts of implants. It was up in my sinus cavity and they pulled it out. But as they did, they cut the inside of my nasal passage and my nose actually bled on and off for 3 days. But I didn't mind because for me, it was a constant reminder that I actually had been there and done that.
Yeah, I was talking to a woman the other day about a book she's written about her experiences, and she was talking about when she was a child, she had really bad nosebleeds that would come and go. Do you think that's that could be a sign? Obviously, it's not everybody that has nosebleeds.
No, of course not. And yeah, we can't, you know, make that assumption. But I've also had sort of contact with other races, and just the sheer pressure of the contact in that telepathic state, in the dream states, I woke up and just had blood coming out of my nose. So, yeah, I would suggest that the body has a mechanism to release pressure, under pressure, I guess, and often that can be a blood nose. So I'm glad that it doesn't. You don't want to have a problem with it, do you?
Did you ever get the impression in these experiences where it was more that it was like an abduction, where perhaps they needed permission in some way? Because I talked to somebody who said they had experiences when they were 5 years old and the ETs in their room were kind of dressed like, they looked like monkeys with clown makeup on. And they were saying, hey, come with us, come with us. Why don't you come with us? And they were saying, no, I don't want to go with you. And it was like they couldn't take them without the person giving them permission to take them.
It's interesting because science had a lot of contact as well. And I think at one point you saw a whole lot of 6-foot rabbits that around you, you know.
Yeah.
But they were observing Cyan as well.
Yeah.
I don't believe that they need to have your permission, but I think that they would prefer that if you do go with them, that they don't have to physically force you to go with them.
Especially a child.
Especially a child. So, you know, Cyan's been on craft as a child. I've been on craft as a child as well. There's lots of things that go on craft with sort of lots of adults and, you know, sort of them being observed in the way that they're interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
There could be us on craft as children talking to each other. The Zetas would be watching us as well, but you won't see them generally as Zetas, but we were allowed to see them in their natural, true state. Other people may see them as nurses or, I don't know, whatever a person wants to see.
Yeah, they... The Zetas do try their best not to cause any distress to a human, especially children, and they will look into the mind of the person that they need to contact and look for imagery that they believe the person finds comforting. So it actually could be a relative that they're shown or a favourite teacher from school or, in my case, which sounds bonkers, 6-7 foot tall Easter bunnies, which actually multiple people we've spoken to have also seen.
Yeah.
One person we know was, you know, they loved Star Wars as a young child, and they, I think it was Boba Fett that they materialized as, you know.
Mm.
So they really do try to save distress by showing you imagery that you find more comforting.
And do they get it wrong sometimes? It's like this lady.
Yes, they did. They got it very wrong once. It was during the day. There was, I think I've told this, you know, a few times, but there were four people on a couch. I was standing there talking to them. They're all sitting down. They stopped talking. They looked around me and someone said, you need to turn around. And I've turned around and there's this 7 to 8 foot entity that's materialized as Pan. The being Pan, and it's broad daylight, and all the windows, the blinds are open. Here's this being standing there, crouching down in the doorway, five or so meters away, and we're all just looking at it, wondering what's this? You know, like we have no idea what we're looking at, but for some reason, I just instinctively walked over and said to the being, "Look, you're not allowed to be here." And it just disappeared in front of everybody's eyes. And, you know, obviously I don't believe that those young people that saw that would ever forget that. And I've had people contact me that were seeing those things around me at that point as well that said, I remember seeing it.
So we keep mentioning the Zetas. Can you just quickly say, is it the Zetas because they come from that star system Zeta Reticuli, or is it just a name that you've given them?
I believe that they actually come from a lot of different places. You know, like it's like saying to humans in 1,000 years' time, where are you from? And someone says, oh, you must be from Earth, you know. And the humans go, but no, hang on, we live on Mars and we live here and we live there, we live all over the place. The Zetas basically talk about the Zeta Reticulum. But they live in many, many different places. They live on craft as well, as do many other races. And they've told us that there's like, you know, 1,000 races within the Milky Way galaxy. And, of course, the possibility of that happening is quite high considering there's like, you know, how many millions of suns in the galaxy? It's pretty
Yeah, they're going to lose count soon, yeah. I think.
If you saw them, would other people say that's the Greys or it's
yeah,
not the...
Yeah,
yeah.
Some people would say that, but we've been pretty lucky in our conversations with them. So we know about 6 or 7 different versions of them, and we don't mean in height or anything like that. We're talking about the types of beings that they are. And the race's structure is that they use a specific race. So if we talk about a species, it's got 63 specific races to it. And people go, oh, that's the greys. But the thing is that six or seven of them have named themselves. And it may be that one of the races is the ethical race or the technical race or the biological race, and each of them perform a specific function. And so they don't need a hierarchical structure or any type of governance, because to perform a function as a race means that you're needed by the rest of the species.
Okay, yeah, specialists and... You know, it's like you've got the IT department, you've got the HR department.
There you go. That's it, yeah.
You talk about being 5 years old and waking up at 2 a.m. in the garden.
Yeah.
And I think there's other signals people might have. Maybe they go to bed in their pyjamas and they wake up and they're naked, or their pyjamas are on backward, but they've got no memory of contact. Are these little clues that people can spot?
Well, I had a couple of clues of my own that I woke up with a hole in my right leg where a scoop mark had been taken. I don't believe that they take that depth of skin anymore, but I was told that I'd been shot through the leg by an archer with an arrow, and, of course, that's actually not possible. But when I pulled the arrow out, rather than the blood coming out and running down my leg, it just went straight out like a stick that you could sort of like break off. So there was something completely wrong with the whole narrative. I realised even as a child that something wasn't right, because at one time I saw something on the footpath and just started screaming out to my mother to come outside, that the aliens were here. Now, we have to remember back then that TV had just been put into homes in many houses, and the only thing that was really on TV was a test pattern. So for a five-year-old child to be talking about aliens probably was a little bit unheard of. I'm not sure how I even understood what that word meant, but in my mind I seemed to know what it was. And, of course, I was watching them walking around the house at night as well. And I thought that it was normal. As a child, I thought it was normal that everyone was seeing the same type of thing that I was seeing.
We grow up with it. It doesn't seem unusual. We can ask Cyan, did you have like memory of contact from very early on, or did you have contact and then only remember it later?
I always remember seeing those 6-7 foot tall Easter bunnies. I've never forgot that. But what was very peculiar in me realizing what it was later on was the fact that I never questioned as to why there would be a 6 or 7 foot tall Easter bunny in my house at, you know, in the middle of the night when everybody was asleep and I was up by myself, you know. It's bizarre. It's like the thought never even came into my mind that it would be unusual. It was only, 20, 25, 30 years later where I'm thinking to myself, now, what was that about? Like, you know, what was that? And you sort of suddenly realize the gravity of the memory, and you suddenly realize, hang on, that just doesn't make any sense. But you remember it as if it was yesterday. I mean, it really was like it was yesterday.
Did you question why you were on craft when you were 8 years old?
Oh, I did. When I was eight, I had a craft experience, but that was hidden behind screen memories, and they very carefully interwove it with a real-life trip to the dentist. And I always had this horrendous, I still do, have a horrendous fear of going to the dentist. I really don't like dentists. It's not their fault. It's my own phobia. And that was really unexplained. It was only 10 years ago that I found out that the event that I thought had occurred at the dentist actually hadn't. And there'd been this whole other experience behind this narrative that I was given as a younger child. But look, there was a long period there where I really didn't see what had actually happened. But when that screen memory dropped, it was like somebody had taken the pause button off a record playing. It was like reliving it in every aspect of the event happening. It wasn't like just recalling a memory. I literally went through it in 3D, you know, Technicolor, all the emotions, the fear, just everything. And it was incredibly confronting. Luckily, I understood the context of it by that time. And so the recollection of it made a lot of sense. But yeah, I had experiences as a child.
Well, it's interesting that there are these screen memories and you talk about them in the book and the different types. And I made a couple of notes of them. There's like the type B screen memories that are a narrative. I talked to somebody who said that when they were small, they found themselves at what seemed to be a birthday party for a whole load of children, but it just didn't seem right. And there was a really weird kid there that now they think was observing. It was one of the ETs. And the other one was the construct. So could we, first of all, could we talk about type B screen memories?
So A, type A is missing time. A lot of people know about missing time. B is a narrative. You're on craft, you're nursing a child, or you're looking at a tube with a human in it or some ET or something's happening, or you're actually driving the craft. These narratives are given to humans to keep the human mind busy while the extraterrestrial component of the person or the hybrid is then probably interacting with their own race. So a lot of the humans that are here are actually extraterrestrials, they're hybrid humans. So their own races come to visit them, which means that it explains why they're having contact. And the constructs are used, which is a different category, to examine your reaction to specific things taking place. And they place the construct in such a way that it can't be identified by other beings and spirits. And so when they enact the construct around a person, they'll wait to see your response. And if they want to, they can actually restart the construct as well as many times as they want. And you won't know that you've actually been in the construct before.
And this is, it's like, so they're testing you. They might put you in an emotional scenario because they want to see how humans react emotionally.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this also, you're saying that this idea that you be on a craft and you're introduced to your hybrid children and all these things happen, like flying the craft, that's just, it's kind of like a magician who's, he's saying, hey, look at this hand, but actually he's doing something with his other hand. And those people that report those things.
It can be that, it can be, but it can also be that a person is visiting their children as well. And so to be able to recognize, understand, and know the difference takes a lot of work by people. So quite often humans will be given the narrative of the child, the narrative of their child. It may not be real, but for the people that that have experienced it fully, it could be a real scenario.
Have you been in a construct situation and you're halfway through it and you've spotted it and you thought, hang on a second, I'm in the construct and the ETs are, sorry, I keep calling them ETs, maybe I call them Zetas. The Zetas are like, oh man, he's spotted it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sort of going a bit croaky, but I have been in constructs before and I've realised that I have been in one, and that sort of finishes the construct. It doesn't work anymore after that. The trick is to identify the construct.
Could you give us an example of one you've been in?
Yeah, I mean, I've got multiple different examples. One could be an emotional reaction to a certain type of situation, and a person might be wondering, you know, why is it this same sort of thing keeps happening? They react to the situation and then they find themselves in exactly the same predicament or an incredibly similar predicament, say a week later. You know, hang on, I'm sure I dealt with something like this last week, and it just keeps coming back and keeps coming back and back and back. And, you know, in the end, you're left going, well, okay, maybe I need to handle this situation differently. You handle the situation differently and it and the situation goes away. Mm. Now, whether it's with, I don't know, a different set of characters or people in the construct, or it's the same characters in the construct, you know, who it's almost impossible to tell how it might play out. But that's certainly one example. Another example I've experienced was I was in a park just resting with a coffee, just relaxing, and I watched a black cat walk across the edge of a tennis court. I love black cats. I noticed the cat and just watched the cat. He walked about 20, 30 meters along. In a split second, the cat was back at the point where I first spotted him, and he did exactly the same. And I just remember, you know, what just happened there? Am I seeing things? Like, how on earth did that just happen? You know,
Some people would call that like a glitch in the matrix. But
that's what I put it down to.
You know, yeah. I mean, once you start to understand that you are observing your environment, you can catch these constructs out.
Mm.
It's very much a holographic environment that we're in.
And do they change it a little bit? Like, so you've seen the cat walk across, and then the next time it happens, the cat takes a different direction, or somebody comes and interacts.
It was like someone hit the replay button. It was identical. It was just the most peculiar thing to witness. It really was.
Oh, okay.
So constructs can be many different things, and depending on how the construct plays out, and it could be, so you could believe it could be an abduction scenario, and they'll keep playing the construct over and over and over, see how you react in many, many different situations.
I talked to a guy who found himself in an apartment, and it seemed terribly familiar to him, but he's sure he'd never been there before. And there were photographs on the side, and he was in these photographs with these people he didn't know who they are. And he said that he kept on catching, like, in the corner of his eye, there was somebody there, and he'd look round and there was no one there.
Yeah.
And it was like there was another him living another life. But I wondered if that was a construct or there actually was a parallel life.
Well, it would depend. I mean, there's so many answers to what you've just said. There could be that he was actually existing in the astral in real-time space.
Yeah.
And seeing himself from a different perspective. He could have also been in the astral, which is the mirror image of the physical, in real-time astral, but basically on a timeline, and so observing himself from different aspects of time. So there's a whole lot of different scenarios that are possible that we've been shown by the Zetas in regards to what reality looks like.
You say when a human is taken on board a craft, you've generally found that they're a hybrid human, and they can be physically hybrid or spiritually hybrid. And so is that a thing? So it's spiritual? It's like, you know, we say we've got a soul. You say, like, you've got a human body, but your soul is the soul of a Zeta?
When we talk about hybrids, we generally say that the animated physical form of a human being is basically a spirit person. And what will happen is that through what is classed as generational line, so there'll be people that say that they're being contacted generationally, that their grandparents were contacted, that sort of thing, that the races, specific races, will incarnate and create relationship with spirit people. And in doing so, when the child's born, the child is an extraterrestrial spirit hybrid. And when they go on craft, because of the, and this is a little bit technical, but when people are on craft, they're either found holding a box in their hand, that's called the alien box phenomenon, and that's where they're either their human self is placed into the box or their extraterrestrial self.
Their consciousness,
so that the other part that's not being held in the technology is actually interacting with the extraterrestrials as well. That there's many different scenarios where people are on craft, and if they're hybrids, it would depend on which part of them is interacting with the beings on the craft.
There's this thing where some people can say that it's almost like when they're abducted, the abduction could take 2 hours, but when they're brought back, only 10 seconds has gone past. So
that's right.
Is there a thing that the Zetas can exist outside of time, or is it just a different time moves at a different speed for them?
Well, yeah, I'd suggest it's both. So I'm here, I see a craft over there, and then next thing, within a split second, it's travelled 40,000 kilometres, it's over there. But did it really happen? The Zetas have explained that as being what's called HRT, but basically the wording for it is space-time compression. So while I'm standing there in my one-second time frame, they have 10 seconds or 20 minutes to travel from one point to another. And this is why quite often you can see them, you know, traveling or craft moving in very fast different directions because of the fact that they're moving to a different space-time compression ratio. This is a well-known phenomenon for people that are abductees or contactees. When they go onto craft, they'll be surrounded usually by a mist, and the mist is formed by the compression inside craft.
How would that affect you in your human body? Is it something where your body has to adjust to a speeding up or something?
So you could be gone for 5 minutes from your house, but look down and your fingernails have grown exponentially long, or, you know, you need a shave. You only shaved an hour ago, but now you've got a sort of 5 o'clock shadow. It depends. You see, the physical body reacts differently than I guess you would expect it to, but it does recognise cellular difference when it's on in a compression state, being the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The human body will still go through its natural process. Hence you wake up and go, hang on, like Paul said, I shaved an hour ago. What's going on?
Yeah.
What is this thing? I think you called it heterodyning. Is that what it's called?
Oh, heterodyning, yeah. Mm-hmm. So years ago I was reading about a process called CE5, and I thought to myself, well, I'll have a go at that. And I sort of thought that it might have been effective. We didn't really get many good results with it.
To contact
extraterrestrials. And then the Zetas started coming through, and they were working with processes that seemed very strange in regards to mediumistic things like deep trance. Well, I took pictures, and we ended up getting some levels of what looked to be constructs around myself that looked like ectoplasm, but it wasn't. And so they started to develop a process called heterodyning, and the heterodyning was basically the first step towards extraterrestrial contact. And the better I got at heterodyning, using breathing techniques, consciousness and intention, the clearer the Zetas were able to even materialize into the house. So the more I was able to take control of my mind, the processes around me, and Cyan's also proficient at heterodyning as well. It takes a while to learn.
It took me a very long time.
A while to learn, but there's a lot to heterodyning. But heterodyning, I believe in the future, will be the way that people properly contact extraterrestrials.
And is it in some way linked to mediumship and trance mediumship and that kind of thing?
Not spirit-based, no. You don't need to do this process to be a medium that has a spirit contact. Mm. Working as a spirit medium, be it any type of altered state or deeper trance work, it's a very passive process, whereas we've coined it extraterrestrial mediumship, for lack of a better way of describing it. That's a very proactive process. You have to learn to elevate your own frequency, as well as a whole other myriad of energetic consciousness processes. And it's kind of like they meet you in the middle. So you go up, they come down, you meet in a heterodyne state. And from that heterodyne state, then there are other processes that take place.
You guys do work as mediums, spirit mediums.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
There are lots of people who work as mediums who never seem to have any ET contact. And lots of people will have a sitting with a medium, and they hear these messages coming through. Because I was a little confused about it, because it kind of seemed like the ETs could be in the same space as the people who've deceased, and that they'd interact and they'd all know about each other. But mediums never bring messages through from people like their dead grandfathers saying, oh, I was talking to a Zeta the other day or something.
That's a very good observation.
Yeah.
We obviously, as trance mediums, have spirit people coming through us as well and speaking, and guides. The spirit people do not know extraterrestrials, and the extraterrestrials do not go near the spirit people, because to do so would change the frequency of the spirit person or spirit realm. And so generally never the two shall meet. So in a trance state situation, what will happen is if the spirit person comes, so, such as a gatekeeper, what will happen will be that the gatekeeper will then speak and then leave. There'll be about a 5-minute break until for the frequency to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then the extraterrestrials, through the training that they've given us, will come through and speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they make sure that the spirit people are long gone before mm-hmm. they come.
And I was talking to somebody the other day, I was recording another episode, and we were talking about mediums like Leslie Flint, who would have yes. some kind of constructed voice box. I think they were talking yes. about ectoplasm.
Yes.
Do the Zetas ever use that kind of technique to speak?
That's a very good question. So if they have a medium that is able to manifest ectoplasm, then what will have happened is that the medium will have been trained by their spirit team or their gatekeeper to exude ectoplasm to create an independent direct voice process. John Campbell Sloan, Leslie Flint all used independent direct voice. The Zetas will utilize ectoplasm from a medium only at the beginning, just to, and there's some reasons for this. So imagine that a person's going into a trance state and the spirit people are wanting to speak for themselves. They'll either coat the voice box of the medium or they'll create an independent voice box away from the medium. But what the Zetas may want to do is create enough energy in the room by the coalescence of ectoplasm from multiple sitters, so that ultimately they can create enough energy in the room to then perform what's called a gateway function. And the gateway function is where the Zetas will bring into the room another race, a different type of race.
Just one more sidetrack down this avenue of spiritual stuff. When you have poltergeists, which, you know, there's been a lot of recorded cases of multiple witnesses seeing things move and noises, and sometimes it can be quite violent. Is that, like they say, it could be the human that's creating it and it's not a spirit? Or would you say it's more likely to be somebody who's deceased who's causing problems?
I mean, again, there could be a whole range of explanations for that kind of phenomena. But I think in our experience, generally, we find that the chaotic kind of experience you're talking about is created by people without realizing it. Their own energy,
kinetic energy.
Yeah, it could be the environment of the house. Maybe there's high energy, high drama, whichever way that goes, and that creates the kinetic.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, and then that causes all sorts of things to take place. I do personally know of cases where, you know, there's been a very disgruntled spirit in the house who's thrown, you know, cups around, and you know of multiple cases of you know, spirits behaving badly. But there's generally always a reason why the spirit's unhappy, and, you know, it's not often as complicated as people think.
You know that people can behave badly as well, and those people, when they pass over, can behave badly as spirits.
Yeah.
So it's, if we, as long as we keep bringing it back to the fact that spirit people are not angelic, that they were once in the physical form and that they have a personality, then we can start to understand why they display some of the behaviours that they do.
Yeah. And so if it is coming off a person, which usually seems to be a teenager.
It can be.
Say no more.
If they're capable of doing that, then that might suggest we're all capable of doing that, if only we learned how to do it. Because there's something you say in the book is that a hybrid can be trained to do all sorts of things.
That's correct.
And it's like telekinesis, that's one of those things?
Yeah, I've met someone that does telekinesis, and when I asked them, was it them doing it or was it an energy, they couldn't tell me the difference. They just knew that if they went into a specific state of being, a specific state of energy, that the things then moved around them. I think, though, that with the uncontrolled level of, kinetic energy, it's more of an outburst and then things happen.
And so what sort of training do hybrids get? Because you talked about flying craft and things, but maybe that's just a screen for something.
Yeah, it is. Well, when we talk about training for hybrids, what we talk about is the first thing that's critical is that a hybrid understands how to connect to their own race. And once they understand how to connect to their own race, then what happens is their race take over the training. And so the heterodyning part is where the hybrid is taught how to connect to the race. Then it'll be up to the race as to what abilities that manifest around the hybrid, and whether that's things like not just remote viewing, but remote viewing on steroids, or synthetic quantum environment manipulation, which is mentioned in the primer of the Zeta race, extensualized states of consciousness. And actually, I think I just put a blog up in regards to what the Zetas have said is possible for humans, and it's quite advanced as well. So that'll be on the website for people to read in regards to hybrid training and those sorts of things.
Right, okay. Because one of the things that people say they're trained to do in flying these crafts, they're told, when the time comes, you'll be helping with, evacuating the earth, or there'll be some great disaster and you can help people move. Yeah. Is that just a fake thing they're just saying, or is there anything to it?
Just as the some races will try to make people feel very comfortable in their presence by showing them imagery that they're comfortable with, when people are aboard craft, again, they're looking for something that the person feels comfortable with to keep themselves, keep their minds busy whilst, as Paul said, the extraterrestrial component may be off actually communicating with their own race. And so, flying an extraterrestrial craft is highly likely to be inherited. I mean, it's a great idea, isn't it? I mean, who, given the opportunity, and, do you want to sit in the hot seat and have a little go? You're thinking, yeah, I can do that. The mind is kept occupied and amused by that thought. And so, of course, they use it.
Right, okay. With the craft, it seems that when people see them, it's like every single time somebody talks about what they've seen, the craft's a different design. It's like there's a factory that changes its blueprints every day. But what's going on there?
But the thing is that the craft are able to create a holographic representation of themselves, but telepathically. So a lot of people will say that they've seen three orbs combined to form a craft, and then either a craft has then turned into three orbs and split and disappeared. From my own experience with craft, we've had craft come down, we've had craft be seen visually from only meters away. These craft can appear in any way that they want to appear to a human. And so a human may be looking at something but not realizing that they're actually looking at a craft, because the craft is embedding into the human's mind an image that they believe that the human will accept.
I wanted to talk to you about one of the things you say in the book about Kathleen Marden's healing.
Yep.
And that seemed quite remarkable that they would do that for her, because we don't really hear about this. It's like if we had that telephone, we could call the Zetas up and say, can you pick me up and give me a healing? But what happened with Kathleen Marden?
I was only a very young medium, and the Zetas had come through, and they were speaking to a group of sitters every week. People would come around and the Zetas would talk to them, and we were actually recording it all. And then I did a survey for an experiences group for MUFON, and it was run by Kathleen Martin. Kathleen contacted Kathleen. I'm not sure which one it was. But Kathleen then asked if she could speak to one of the Zetas through me, and they said that they would do that. So I went into an altered trance state online, and Kathleen spoke to them and asked for if they could do a healing. They said yes, they would. And then within 3 days, she was totally healed of a problem that she'd had for over 20 years.
And so there was a kind of abduction, and they took her on board a craft?
Well, they didn't abduct her because she asked to be healed. They took her on board craft, absolutely. But she was obviously a willing participant to be healed as well. And I would suggest that a lot of humans are taken on craft to be healed of things that they probably don't realise that they need healing from.
You talked about doing the trance state and communicating. Do you do demonstrations of this? Do you do it online or do you do it in person?
Yeah, I do it publicly. So when I demonstrate mediumship, I'll sit in seance conditions. And if you have a look on our YouTube channel, The Zeta Connection, there's one video there of audio only where people are seeing Zetas come through as a projection in the room. And not seeing me anymore. So, yeah, I do this publicly. I've been doing it for many years, and Zetas have spoken to thousands of people through me. But the difference is that when we do it in red light, quite often the Zetas can be seen walking around the room as well as a distortion or in red light.
Have you ever done it online, or is that not something you do?
Yeah, I have. Done sittings online, yes, for sure.
We sit every month online.
Yeah, every month. Yeah.
Can you give us the name of your YouTube channel so people can look it up?
Yeah, it's called The Zeta Connection.
There's another thing there that you talk about, synthetic quantum environments. Is that the same as the construct, or is it something else?
No, it's completely different. So in the past, people that were talking about things like Montauk, the Philadelphia experiment, and jump room technology were jumping into what they thought was Mars, the Mars environment. Mm-hmm. What they were actually doing was jumping into the SQEs. And these synthetic quantum environments are mirror images of environments. And so a human wouldn't know that they were actually jumping into these environments as well. SQEs are used by the Zetas from a technical perspective. So what they may do is to view the current timeline. They'll take a copy of the timeline and put it into an SQE because to actually observe something changes it. And because they know that it will change it, they don't want to change the current timeline. So what they'll do is they'll view the copy and then make a determination of what they believe is the probability of something happening on the timeline.
And so can they speed up the passage of time in an SQE so they can see?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I suppose they could test disclosure with that, couldn't they? They could see what would happen if we just show our craft all over the planet and see how the humans react.
Yeah, that's right. And we've had discussions with them about it and through trance and Cyan talks to them often. And they said, look, the problem with bringing 10,000 craft to the planet is if a human walks anywhere near a craft, generally within 30 meters away, the human can become burnt. Mm. And so if you bring 10,000 craft to the planet, the possibility of exponentially increasing the level of frequency on the planet, it could have a bit of a technological issue in regards to what the crafts together as a combined force would do, and it would be totally unintentional as well.
I think they also talked about the potential for a combined mass frequency of the craft affecting the frequency of the planet as well.
Yeah, that's why all these a lot of this stuff's written in the primer of the Zeta Race and the Zeta interviews.
There was something I read just a couple of days ago, and it was in The Guardian over here, about an intelligence guy who says he was complaining about lying to Congress because he knew about crashed craft that the US have got. And so with those craft, if they've crashed, does that mean that they're kind of inactive and that whole, the compression thing you're talking about and the effects that they have, that's just stopped because like the craft's switched off?
Yeah, so the craft is sentient. So obviously if there's been a crash and that report states that the whistleblower has come forward to state that there's extraterrestrial bodies and extraterrestrial craft that are known of, and this has become a worldwide news item at this point. A few people have come forward stating other information to back that up. These craft, although they've gone offline and they've probably been back engineered, there would be technologies on the craft that humans wouldn't understand that may have at some point been released into the atmosphere as well. So
if we get back to this thing where people might see something in their house, are there times where the Zetas can move around your house and around you and you would have no idea of it at all?
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're in a different dimension, or is it that their vibrations are very fast?
But all they need to do is your visual scope, your range of seeing in specific light spectrums is very limited. And so they've only got to move outside of that light spectrum and they'll be all you'll see is some sort of distortion in the room, and they can be standing physically next to you.
And you had an incident, I think, where you were in the house and there was a Zeta there and it had its back to you, and you went and looked at it and it was like, holy moly, you can see me?
That's right, yeah. And so I very carefully walked up because I didn't want to scare it. By then I was having a lot of contact with them and I wasn't worried about them. And it was only very small, so I didn't, have a problem. And I walked up behind it and it was busy sort of looking at something. And I came around the front of it and then knelt down and looked at it and said, you do realize that I can see you, and then it just disappeared. Now, from their perspective, did it just change its frequency and move outside of my visual range? I don't know. Did it activate some technology? I don't know. But having seen it myself, how they do it, multiple times, it's easy for them to be in the room and you not see them.
Do you think they're around us all the time, or they just very rarely would visit?
It would depend on who they were visiting, why they were visiting, what information were they seeking to get. But I don't think anybody should be surprised, because you're surrounded by spirits all of the time anyway. So if you're surrounded by spirits, you can also be surrounded by extraterrestrials or interdimensional entities.
Yeah, it seems a little creepy in a way. I suppose if you think your grandfather's in the room with you at certain times, it could seem a little creepy, or you might think, hey, I want some privacy.
Well, they do. Spirits are really good, actually. So, if I look around now, there are no spirits in this room. Okay. They give you your space because they know that you need your space. But if you need to talk to the spirit people that love you and care for you, it could be someone that's passed over or a guide, they'll turn their thought to you from spirit realm. And for mediums that can see spirits subjectively and objectively, we'll then start to see that spirit person come into our physical fabric, and we'll be able to see them. So spirit people, although I say they're around us all the time, we're in their fabric as well as we are with them. And so we may not be acknowledging the fact that they're with us, but they need to acknowledge us as well. There needs to be a meeting of minds for them to be around us and for us to be around them.
And with the Zetas' minds, you say that they're both a single consciousness and part of a hive mind?
That's correct, yes. Yes. So that's based around the humans are creating a collective consciousness. It's based in the fourth dimensional space, which is the astral. And that collective human mind, it's every thought, every desire, every want that a human's ever had, that's ever existed, every living being on the planet. And that's creating a coalesced environment of thought around the planet. Now, the Zetas have the same type of process, but theirs allows them to not have to transition through the death process. They can just leave their, what they call their container, their physical body, and step straight into their collective consciousness. That means that they can also stay there if they want to and leave their physical body in stasis here. And so because of that, it's just a different process that they use. But with the interaction we've had with other races, races all have different ways of incarnating as well.
And so I suppose if they can be either single consciousness or part of a hive mind, if they're,
yep,
they're living their life, but then if they come across a real complicated problem, they can dip into the hive mind and get...
If they choose to, yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you say, let's say that you're an extraterrestrial and you're living and working on planet and you're working where the craft are built, well, you're going to be performing a function based on your genetics. Your inherited genetics will mean that you are in the best possible role that you can play, because that is, you have a genetic leaning towards the function that you're performing. But it doesn't mean that you're always connected telepathically to the collective. It means that you may, when you choose to, because you have free will and you're in service to others, that you can then connect to the collective for specific information as required.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you again. It's been a fascinating episode. We were talking about the book, The Zeta Race, Inside the Hive Mind from Human to Alien. Well, that's just one of your books, isn't it? People can get them all on Amazon?
Yeah, that's right. There's a few different ones. The primer of The Zeta Race and The Zeta Interviews are two free books you can download off our website. And then there's Alien Interaction, which is the first book that I wrote by myself. And then The Zeta Mind Contact.
Yep.
And then The Zeta Race Inside the Hive Mind. So there's a few books there for sure.
Can you give us the address of your website?
TheZetaConnection.com.
Great. Well, it's been great talking to you again. Thanks a lot for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've enjoyed it.
And that was an interview with Paul Hamden and Cyan about the book, The Zeta Race, Inside the Hive Mind, From Human to Alien. And if you want to hear the rest of this amazing interview, you'll need to sign up to Patreon for the extended episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFO podcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And if you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. And when you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called The Past Lives Podcast, and there are over 250 episodes. On The Past Lives Podcast, I look into evidence of an afterlife, such as near-death experiences, children with past life memories, mediumship, deathbed visions, and other phenomena. And I also release an extra episode of The Past Lives Podcast every Thursday, and that's called Paranormal Stories, and that almost always features UFOs. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. And when you book a past life regression hypnosis session with me, and you've signed up to Patreon, you get a 25% discount. And I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. My Instagram is the Past Lives Podcast with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. And you talked about them being, their bodies are a container. So yeah. do they view their bodies almost like disposable, and that they'll use them for as long as the body's kind of young, and then when it gets a bit too old, they get rid of it and get a new one?
It's more functional. It's from their perspective, there's no old or young. From their perspective, it's like, I'll give you an example. You have the ability to, let's say, clone yourself.